Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hello there. Patrick Madrid here. I made a mistake at the end of the show yesterday. Cyrus caught me, but I don't think you heard it because the microphone was turned off. I said, was it yesterday that I did that, Cyrus?
Sure
I
was.
Said, I'll be right back. And the show is over.
Was it? 3 hours went by so fast, you thought we were coming back at the end of the break.
I really did.
And boy, if there's ever a time that I get to tell you you're wrong, boy, do I enjoy it. Doesn't happen a lot, but when it does.
I don't mind. I don't mind. You know, it does make me, I wonder sometimes, this show goes by so fast. It's a three-hour program. It's not a three-hour tour where you get stuck forever on an island, but this is a three-hour program, and it is over and done, lickety-split. Even I get confused.
Well, some people call you the skipper. I guess that would make me Gilligan.
No, I'm more like the scientist guy.
Oh, okay.
What was his name?
In your mind.
In my mind, yeah. I'm not the skipper, please. Well, you could be Gilligan to my professor. I'll be the professor.
So. Anyway.
888-914-9149. Going to get to your phone calls here in just a moment. I did have an email that came in. Now, we've had a couple of convos here on the show about marital issues or issues involving, say, the sixth and the ninth commandment. And so there are actually two follow-ups to one that I talked about in the last few days about a gentleman who called in and asked, he's an art student, he's an artist, whatever, and he wanted to know about the morality of painting a nude model. And so we talked about that. So I have two emails from folk who were listening and responded to that. I want to get to that, and then we'll get to your phone calls, 888-914-9149. This one's from Dan listening in Albuquerque on our 1550 AM station. Hello, Dan. Muchas enchiladas. He says, Patrick, great answer to the artist calling about painting nude models. I think he wanted to hear you justify this, and I totally agree with your answer against doing that. There is too much of this go along to get along attitude in the church these days, and I'm glad you stand up for the truth. Thanks, Dan. Well, thank you, Dan. I was, you know, I wasn't trying to ruin his day or anything. I just think that it's not the right thing to do, and for the reasons that I mentioned. Now, anybody who's wondering, well, what did you say? Well, you can always go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Cyrus, would the word nude pull that show up if they put that in, or did we use a different word in the show notes? Because I want them to be able to search for that show and find it, but I don't know if nude would be the right.
I will look that up right now.
Okay. And Cyrus will tell us what's the keyword to search for. Second email on this topic came in from Elena, and she's listening in our Newark, New Jersey area on station 1430 AM. Shout out, Elena. She says, hi, Patrick. When I was an art major about 10 years ago, I unfortunately, maybe fortunately, she puts in parentheses with a question mark, had to draw from nude male and female models. Because of my strong Catholic upbringing, I was pretty horrified when my art professor told the class that we'd be drawing nude models. I could barely look at them. I was so in shock. Eventually, I got over the initial shock and horror and ultimately did really well in that class and subsequent figure drawing classes. I excelled at it, to be honest, and my professor was very happy with my work. In retrospect, I wonder if I had not seen nude models, perhaps I would not have had some of the issues I have today regarding chastity and purity. Bingo bango. See, that's what I was saying. This is exactly what I was saying, is that you may be in the class and you're learning how to draw the human body and you're focusing, and maybe you can push those thoughts out of your mind. Inevitably, those thoughts are going to be there. You know it and I know it. Okay, but let's just say you power down another cup of coffee and you focus on what you're doing and you don't really think about it. Well, I'm here to tell you those images are still on your mental hard drive. And that's what she's talking about. So I'll quit editorializing. So she says, once again, in retrospect, I wonder if I had not seen nude models, perhaps I would not have some of the issues I have today regarding chastity and purity. Thankfully, my guardian angel has been doing a relatively good job, considering some of the situations I found myself in as a young adult. And what she's referring to there is how your guardian angel will help purify your imagination if you ask him to help you, meaning he can help eliminate, wipe away, you know, detox some of the images that are on your mental hard drive if you ask your guardian angel to help you to purify your memory and purify your imagination, which is the part of your, it's the operation of your soul that creates these mental images in the first place. So that's what she's referring to, and I'm happy to hear that. She concludes by saying, I do think it's helpful to learn how to draw the human figure if one wants to excel at fine art, but the mind wanders easily when looking at an unclothed person, undoubtedly. Thank you. Well, thank you, Elena. You really crystallized the point I was making from your own experience. So thank you for that. Cyrus, do we know the word yet? The magic word?
The magic word is nude.
So it is nude.
I just typed that into the relevant radio search engine, and the show from August 31st, hour 3, popped right up. All you have
Bingo,
to do is
bango.
Click on it. Yep, super
okay.
easy.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And if you're listening right now and you're saying, well, what did he say about painting nude models? That's where you'll find it. Can you repeat how to find it again, Cyrus?
Yes. Just type in nude. Why are you doing
you're
this
blushing.
To me?
Well, you're blushing.
Why are you doing this to me?
I'm not asking for the word. I just want you to say the hour and the day.
That's it is sufficient. March 31st, hour 3.
It's funny when you blush like that.
Stop.
At first, you'd think it's a really bad sunburn. Then you realize, no, it's just Cyrus blushing. Okay, 888-914-9149. Let's get to Emma now in Overland Park, Kansas. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Patrick. Hi. Thank you
Hi.
So much for taking my call. It is
You're
an
welcome.
Honor to be able to speak with you.
Thank you.
So I'm going to make this as quick as possible because I know you have plenty of questions to get to. So I
No. You're my most important question right now. I have all the time in the world for you. Go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I started my master's in social work this past fall, so just a few weeks ago. But obviously a lot of things have come up, and especially with public education nowadays, I'm going to be learning about homosexuality, transgenderism, sexual orientation, how abortion is a right, et cetera. These are required courses so I can graduate. Mm-hmm. And these are obviously areas that I don't agree with or can condone whatsoever as a really strong and faithful Catholic. I do my best to live my faith every day, and I just don't think I could jeopardize that. And also, like, as a social worker, we're supposed to set our beliefs and values aside when working with clients, but I just don't think morally I'd be able to do that. And I already talked to a priest about it because it's something that I've really been struggling with. And, I told him I'd be more than willing to change career paths if it was going to in any way, potentially jeopardize my relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
But I would just love to know your thoughts because I think you would have a lot of great things to say. So.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. Well, so you're getting your master's degree. If this is immaterial, but I'm curious, did you get that in counseling or something like that?
I got it in human development and family studies, and obviously a lot has, changed since then. So I can be 100% honest. I barely learned about, I hardly learned about anything that is being taught now. I will say I was not as strong in my faith. I had kind of a dramatic conversion story, over this past year.
Okay. The reason I asked that question about the undergrad is because I wanted to get a sense of how much of a sharp turn it would be if you went into a different career path. And it doesn't sound like it would be that sharp of a turn because your undergrad wasn't like the same thing you're getting the master's in. I see now. Well, let me play devil's advocate, if you don't mind. You probably didn't expect I would do this. But if you were to do the master's program and you were learning, in essence, what the other side thinks and learning how they construct their arguments such as they are and learning, and to the extent that you would get some actual knowledge about things like human sexuality, which is a field of study. So it's not as though studying human sexuality as such is a bad thing. It can be done in a bad way or for bad reasons. But there is a case to be made, it seems, that if you can dissociate what you're hearing, and a lot of it will be propaganda, I'm pretty sure, from what you know to be true, and kind of hold yourself aloof from that. And in other words, have the other side explain itself to you such that you understand it and you're in a better position to critique its flaws and the ways in which it is inconsistent or incoherent. I could see some value in that, but that would really depend upon how strong you are in your convictions. There would not be any sin in being in a class and hearing the professor spout ideology or nonsense. You would not be committing a sin. But it could help to more deeply form you so that you will be in a better position to critique and object to things like that in the future. Now, maybe that doesn't appeal to you, and I don't know that it would appeal to everybody. But to use an analogy, there were times when I would go to a, say, a Mormon church, and I would go to the church on Sunday, and I would sit there for 3 hours, and I wouldn't participate like in the service, but I would be there so I could see what was going on. I didn't believe any of it. I didn't believe any of the things that they were saying, but it was important to me to learn how to understand how Mormons approach these topics. I did the same thing with Jehovah's Witnesses. I would go to the Kingdom Hall. I did that a time or two. And I sat through a service or two so I could just understand where they were coming from. I did that at a mosque. I went to a mosque, and I struck up a kind of friendship with some of the guys there, and this is pre-9/11. And I did it not because I was interested in being like them or believing like them, but I wanted to understand where they were coming from. So people who have odd things that appeal to them, and I consider myself probably not very common, that many people wouldn't find that very interesting, although I do. So for me, it was helpful, but for a lot of other people, it would not have been helpful. So maybe in your case, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So in that regard, so when they're telling these ideologies and, you know, these things that I don't agree with, and I'm just sitting there listening to it, would I be obligated as a Catholic who's supposed to spread the love of God and the truth of God to, like, stand up in front of this class and be like, well, that's not right, or, you know, something along those lines?
Yeah. Well, I don't think obligated is the right word. I think it's a great opportunity to do so. But you'd probably get bounced out of that class pretty quickly if you did, because, you know, a lot of these people, once you scratch the surface, you realize that they don't really have good arguments typically. And when they feel that their argument is being threatened, it's not uncommon for them to start retaliating or trying to silence you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So if you, I mean, there's that movie that came out 6-8 years ago, God Is Not Dead. And it's essentially that. You've got an atheist professor who's spouting atheism, and this brave student stands up and says, that's not true, God is not dead. So this whole movie is based upon that premise. And it's a wonderful thing to behold when it happens. But I don't think you would be, strictly speaking, obligated to do that, especially if you're there to learn this material. Now, on the other hand, let me swing in the other direction now. Why not go to a school, maybe a Catholic school, that has an intact program for the master's level where you could get the same kind of master's degree without sitting through all of the nonsense? I'm thinking of Franciscan University of Steubenville. They have a very robust program, both undergrad and MA, in counseling and social work and things. So that's another possibility. You might transfer to a different school and then just do the same degree, but under different circumstances.
Right. And it's funny that you say Franciscan, because I believe I read an article that maybe their, like, licensure to, like, be able to teach social work was maybe, like, looked at or something, you know, because the Catholic Church, you know, doesn't agree with what the morals are supposed to be, or, you know, so that's just funny. But right. Okay.
Just a thought, and they're, for all I know, you know, the University of Mary and any number of other Catholic universities or colleges may also have similar programs. It's just that I taught there for a few semesters, not in that department, but because I was there teaching for a little bit, I got to know some of the other programs, so that's why that comes to mind. But it mm-hmm. could be worth your time to. When does your program actually start, or has it started?
Oh, it's started.
Okay. Well, if you can tough it out, if you just hate it and you tough it out through this semester, I wouldn't be at all surprised if everything you're doing this semester was transferable, if you wanted to change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome. I think it's admirable that you're concerned about self-preservation and making sure that you don't get swept away. Not a lot of young people really think that way, so kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
You got it, Emma. Thank you. Well, why don't we do the next call in Silver City, New Mexico, and talk to Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Patrick. I hope you can help me with a definitive answer to my question.
All right.
I'm only staying in Silver City for a short time because my wife and I are full-time RVers. But a friend of mine invited me to go to Mass with him on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I've gone a couple times with him now to a Benedictine monastery that's just north of town.
Okay.
And I found out that their Mass is a preconciliar Mass, which is kind of interesting because I hadn't been to one since I was an altar boy back in early 60s.
Okay.
Anyway, I found out they're part of the Society of St. Pius the X. And I asked the pastor here at the local church what their status was. He said that they're not in communion with Rome and they don't follow the Pope. Mm-hmm. So I did some research on my own, and I'm getting conflicting answers to whether or not their masses and sacraments are valid. So that's my question. Are they valid?
All right. Well, I need to sort this out a little bit more, Mike. So first of all, Benedictines are a religious order, as you know, I'm sure. And the Society of St. Pius X, SSPX, is not a religious order. So there, you can't be a Dominican in the SSPX. You're either one or the other. Now, it may be that Benedictines, it may be that they are somehow in association with the SSPX, or maybe they, I'm not really sure what that would be, but they're two distinct groups. So as you're describing it to me, because the SSPX, they're very critical of the church, they're very critical of Vatican II and very critical of the church by and large since the Second Vatican Council, but they don't regard the new Mass as invalid. They don't like it, but they don't think that it's invalid. So the way you're describing this to me suggests to me that maybe this is not even SSPX level. This is just a renegade group going by the, you know, by the title Benedictine. Maybe at one time they were Benedictines in good standing. I don't know. But it sounds as though they might be sedevacantists, and they may not even have, at the level of the SSPX, that kind of a status. They may be renegade, for all I know.
Well, maybe this will help. I went to Mass there a week ago Sunday, mm-hmm. and they had a bishop come in, and he was going to do confirmations. And he was a Swiss bishop, Bishop Bernard Felle.
Okay, that's SSPX. He's SSPX, that's true.
Okay, so that might help with.
All right. So here's the definitive answer I can give you, Mike, and that is that the SSPX, let's just concentrate on them for right now.
Okay.
The SSPX, originally in 1988, when Archbishop Lefebvre defied Pope John Paul II and against the Pope's express will, he consecrated four of his priests to be bishops and thus incurred excommunication for himself and these four men. And this was a real break, a real rupture. And as a result of that, the status of the SSPX became extremely ambiguous because the founder and these four men who were consecrated bishops, they were excommunicated. The excommunications were eventually lifted, but the damage was done. And so in the interim, there has been a debate, even among canon lawyers and others, as to what exactly is their status. And is it, can you go to an SSPX Mass? Can you get married in one of their chapels? Can you, you know, live a liturgical life? And there's a strong difference of opinion. And it has never really been adequately resolved in any definitive way. The closest that I've come to seeing something that seems about as definitive as it gets right now, because their status is irregular. They're not really in union with the church, but at the same time, they pray for the Pope, and they have, you know, valid holy orders, that much is for sure. So the closest thing I've come in recent years would be a substantive blog post by Father John Zuhlsdorf. He goes by Father Z online. And he, on his blog, What Does the Prayer Really Say?, he responded point by point to this very question regarding, is their Mass valid? Would their confessions be valid? What about weddings? Can you attend a Mass at an SSPX chapel? And I think he was very fair about it, and he pointed out those areas where there is not only validity, but it would be morally licit, or it would be licit in any case for somebody to attend it. I need to tell you this right up front. I am not sympathetic to what the SSPX is doing. I am sympathetic to many of their concerns and to many of the things that they would like to see corrected in the church, but I'm not sympathetic to the way in which they've gone about trying to do that. So the last thing I would do would be to encourage people to go to the SSPX, but at the same time, acknowledge that they have a point and some of the things that they're concerned about do need to be addressed. So how about this, Mike, because I have to take a break. If you go to my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid, in the next 60 seconds or so, I will find that article by Father John Zuhlsdorf, Father Z, and I will retweet it so you can read it directly. I would tell you exactly where it is, but I don't know where it is. I've got to go find it. And you can find it at my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. Now, if you're not on Twitter, that's not a problem. Just go to twitter.com/PatrickMadrid and you'll find it. So I'll get that up there, lickety split, and you can take a look at that, Mike. I think Father Z's clarity will help. Thank you. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I think I know why you're playing this.
Yeah, I saw a little thing on Twitter yesterday, and you teased some kind of a back to the story story.
Back to the story?
Back to the story. Back to the future story.
And, that's right, I did.
Yeah, so what's going on? What's your Marty? Come on, Marty.
Hello, McFly.
McFly.
Yeah. Well, what prompted it was I posted a picture on Twitter. My address there, at Patrick Madrid, and it shows a scene from the Back to the Future 3 where the DeLorean is being pushed on the train tracks by a steam engine train because they go back into the Old West. And then it shows in the second picture, it's actually just a miniature scale. In the movie, it looks like the real thing, but you see the camera crew, and it's much smaller than it appears in the movie, and it just gives you a sense of perspective. And I said below that, I said, one of these days on the show, I'll tell you the true story of how maddeningly close I came to witnessing the filming of the terrorist scene in the first Back to the Future movie. That was in 1985. So I guess this is your way of asking me to tell that story.
Yeah, and so that's at the mall, right? The Twin Pines Mall?
Yes, but it's not, well, okay, in the movie, it's the Twin Pines Mall. But in actual fact, it was the Puente Hills Mall. And it's right off the 60 freeway. And I worked in retail for some years. And so there was a store there in that mall that I worked at for a while as kind of like a district manager kind of guy. And so I had, for some reason, it was 1985, and for some reason I had to go to that store. And I don't remember why I was there, but I was in the mall. And as I was coming out, it was about dusk, and I saw in the parking lot all these big like semis, and there were big lights like to light up a movie set, and there were cameras, and there were all kinds of people scurrying around. And I asked the mall cop who was there at the door, he was looking at all this, and I said, "What is all that?" And he said, "Oh, well, Michael J. Fox is here, and there's some new movie that they're filming, and they're going to film a scene out in the parking lot." And I said, "Really, what's the movie?" He says, "Back to the Future." And I said, and of course it hadn't come out yet. So I said, really? Okay. I got to get home. And so I got in my jalopy and I drove home. I could have
you
stayed.
You left?
I left.
Hello?
I left.
Anybody home? Hey, think with fly thing.
I know. I've kicked myself a million times over because I was right there and I could have stood there. I could have actually walked over to where they had all this because, you know, there were other people there. Because it was almost dark, and I probably would have had to wait a couple of hours, but I could have watched them film the scene where the terrorists attack in the parking lot and the DeLorean gets going and Marty McFly goes into the future. I could have, or I forget, who went into the future in that scene? Was it Doc or was it Marty? I think it was, I forget. I think it was Marty.
Shape up, man.
All right.
You're a slacker. Do you want to be a slacker for the rest of your life?
Yeah. Yeah, that's making it worse because I could have seen this piece of history. If I had my wits about me, I could have stood there and watched that scene be filmed. But I didn't. So that's my story. Yay. I know.
That's a story.
Hugely dissatisfying.
It really is. Oh, man.
There's no payoff. There's no
happy
ending.
How could
you
know? I mean, it's just this Michael J. Fox was just the kid from Growing Pains or whatever one it was.
Yeah, whatever. But it was, you know, he was
family
still big.
Ties,
it would be like,
ties.
Cyrus, it would be as if you were like walking down a street in suburban London and you see like some long haired guys go into like a music studio and your friend works at the studio and you say, well, you know, who's that? Oh, it's the Beatles. Well, who are they? Oh, the Beatles. I guess I've heard of them. Well, you want to come in? They're going to record a song. You can stand in the control room and watch them. No, I got to get home. You know. That's
we
not so good.
Guys, we were just a band who made it very, very big. That's all.
That's right. All right. So that's my story,
and
that's
you're sticking
how it
to
happened.
It?
Yeah, I've got no choice. I wish there were a happy ending, but there isn't. So there it is. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Adrian in St. Cloud. Good morning, Adrian.
Well, yeah. In a way, my concern kind of segues into what you were talking about.
Oh?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, you know, the words my fellow Americans now are not our preborn my fellow Americans.
Yeah, those who are here in this country, they certainly are.
But, right. The preborn are my fellow Americans. Why is our leadership killing my fellow Americans or supporting it?
I think because there's a lot of money to be made, number one, and because there is a lot of political power that can be amassed as another. So when you mix money and power in politics, that's what you get. You get people who are willing to sacrifice their morals and do something that deep down inside they know is wrong because there's money in it and there's power to be had. That's why I think they do it.
Is that not sacrificing you and me as well? How do we trust them? How do you trust anybody that thinks that way? They can't trust trust it with our with life.
Well, look at it this way. Look at it this way. I feel your pain. I really do. And I concur with you that it's hard to fathom how somebody can make that basic of a mistake, like you don't kill innocent unborn children. But let's not forget, Roe versus Wade was overturned. I just love saying those words. Roe versus Wade was overturned. Mm-hmm. It's done now. So we've made a big stride forward, and there's plenty more yet to do. We have a lot of work yet to do to eliminate abortion entirely in this country, but we're making some progress, some big progress. So maybe that might be the way to channel your frustration with these crazies on the left, and that is to take stock of the progress that we're making and ask God for more of that progress. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Do you remember the day when they said, my fellow Americans, and they meant it?
Yeah. I remember presidents starting their Oval Office addresses to the nation that way. And right now, my fellow Americans, especially the speech that was just given yesterday, half of America got demonized by the president of the United States. So
I know. Yeah. We got
anyway, but you know what? Presidents come and presidents go, and yeah. We're making progress. So I like to concentrate on the positive. It doesn't mean that I ignore the negative. I don't ignore it. I don't pretend it's not there, but I'd rather focus on the positive and the forward momentum that we have. And I think that's where we really need to channel our energies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thanks. Thanks for that.
You got it. Yeah. Thank you, Adrian. Great listening to your thought on this issue. We'll go to Lydia now in Milwaukee. Good morning, Lydia.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just calling in response to the young woman that was wondering whether or not she should speak out in class while she's getting her master's in social work. And I actually just finished up a similar situation, and something that kind of helped me through that was what one of my pastors told me when I was in high school. I went to a Catholic high school in name only, and a lot of the stuff that they taught was extremely heretical. And by the priest's own admission, I took notes and said, is it right that I have a problem with this? Mm-hmm. And by that point, I was just so worn down. I was a junior in high school, and I'd been speaking out in class freshman, sophomore year, and I was just broke by the time junior year hit. And I said to him, what do I do? Yeah. And he said, Jesus was silent before the Sanhedrin. And just remembering that and remembering him saying that to me has kind of helped me realize, like, when it's appropriate or beneficial to speak out, and that the Lord will let you know when he wants you to say something. Like, if you're open to sharing his truth, He's going to let you know, and you're going to know when it's appropriate to speak. So sometimes in those situations, it's best just to be silent, and he will use you in another way with those same people to show his truth. So I just wanted to encourage her and offer that, because like I said, that's really helped me, especially in these academic settings. So
I'll bet. Now, I have a couple questions, if you don't mind, Lydia. I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, sure.
So what were your parents thinking if you were in a school that was just beating you down like this? Were they aware of it, or were they oblivious to what you were going through?
You know what? They were aware of it, and I would come home, and I would express my frustration. And without trying to throw anyone under the bus, one of my parents said, I don't want her there. I think we could find a better spot. Mm-hmm. And the other one was like, no, this is fine. It's not a big deal. So I will say, hindsight being 2020, I think I probably could have gotten a better education somewhere else. But by that same token, I really, when you said you used to go and listen to the opposite side and become acquainted with their ways, so to speak.
Yeah, right. Learn the other side.
I feel very comfortable engaging in conversations like that when they arrive. And it's also been beneficial for me because I've seen other people on the, quote unquote, our side, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
When they try to argue, they're going about it the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they they kind of think if you just hit them in the face with the truth, they're going to see the light. You know what I mean? Or
I do. Yeah.
There's you absolutely, and especially if you're going into any academic arena and want, you know, not your, you don't want to fall on deaf ears. You have to learn the art of their finesse. And I'm sure in social work, she's going to get like a major immersion course in that particular language of their finesse.
Indeed.
You know, I totally agree with you. Look at this. It's going to be frustrating. There were times when I would leave my master's classes crying because it's such a desolate area intellectually and spiritually. There is no God, so there is no creativity there. Right. There is no real engaging in what the academy is supposed to be. It's not there. But unless people like that young woman stay in the field, right, and she's passionate about it and she wants to do well in that field, we're not going to change the academy around.
That's a good point. We do need people to stay there and work from within. Not everybody can do that. I'm glad to hear you made it through, Lydia. Sounds like you've got some babies at your feet.
Well, they're not at my feet, but they're loud.
I can hear them. Well, okay. God bless them. Thanks, Lydia. Thank you so much. Good to talk to you. I'll be right back. This hour sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. The number to call is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's get to Matthew now in Fresno, California. Beautiful downtown Fresno. Welcome, Matthew.
Patrick, back to the future, man.
Great. Anyways, Scott! I can't even do the voice.
There we go.
I can't do voices.
Anyways, we were discussing earlier in the week about pastoral malpractice, and my question now is, how can I inform like some of the lady, you know, like in a nice way, or because I don't want to start anything up, but I also want to save some souls from people getting the wrong information.
What's going
how
on?
How can I go about this the right way? Oh, because the priest, he is saying that the marital act is not a mortal sin. You know, when I used a basketball analogy earlier this week.
Oh, was that you I talked to? Okay. So for people who didn't hear that, you used an analogy of the playing basketball, and I think people understand the analogy just by saying that much. Okay. And then
yes. You
were in confession, and the priest said that if you don't... How can I say this? If you don't score the point by putting the basket into the hoop, then you're doing it wrong. And he said, no, that's not a sin. Do I have it right?
That's correct.
Okay, got it. So you're wondering what to do now?
Just like, you know, just some other people like getting the wrong information so they don't, you know, continue to thinking that it's correct because the priest said so.
Yeah, I see. I would advise you to do the following. Number one, you yourself know what is, in this area, moral and immoral. So it doesn't matter if somebody tells you otherwise. You know the truth. You can help educate your fellow lay people if it's a topic of conversation that is, you know, it's at some point comes up, or if you share it with a friend and you say, here's what happened, but here's what I found out. Pass it on. I mean, that's another way you could do it. But I don't advise you to rabble-rouse and try to start some kind of a movement against this priest or something. The better way to handle that, if you ask me, would be to write him an email and just say, Father, you know, this is an area that has been on my mind since we talked about it, And I know what the church teaches on this issue, and you could cite Humanae Vitae, for example, from Pope Paul VI, where he explains that. You could cite Casti Connubii by Pope Pius XI back in, 1939, 1940, thereabouts. These are magisterial documents that are online in English. You could just quote from them if you want to. You could get a hold of this Manual of Moral Theology that I quoted from yesterday by Dominic Primer. It's known as Primer. Dominic Primer, OP, was the scholar who wrote it. It's called Handbook of Moral Theology. There are any number of other magisterial sources that you could turn to make your point. But my thought here would be, rather than rabble-rouse and try to get people turned against this priest, why not work directly with him, or at least try and say, with all due respect, Father, what you told me in the confessional is wrong. That's not what the Catholic Church teaches, that the marital act the Church teaches must be completed in the natural way. And I can't get into details, obviously, on the air, but you know what I'm talking about. And married people listening right. know what I'm talking about. They understand what I'm saying. You could quote to him Genesis 38, beginning in verse 1, where it has the story of Onan. And it's really, really clear that God was displeased with what Onan did, because God killed him for his sin. He died. His punishment was to be struck dead for what he did. So, without getting angry or vehement or, you know, any of those things, I would say write a respectful letter, an email, and don't make it like so long that nobody wants to read it. In 3-4 paragraphs at the most, just state your case. And I'm offering this to you, Father, in the spirit of friendship and the spirit of, you know, respect. But I do feel the need to remonstrate with you that what you're saying in the confessional, if you're saying it to me, you're probably saying it to other married people, and it's just simply not true. And I wanted to share that with you. Now, he may get angry. He may not respond. He might say, well, you know what? You got a good point. Who knows what he'll do? But at least you've done your duty, Matthew. To the extent you have a duty to do this, you've done your duty. You're admonishing somebody who needs it. Beyond that, I don't think there's anything else you can or should do, other than if it comes up and you're out to dinner with two other couples who are close friends. And although this topic is typically not something that close friends talk about, but let's just say you brought it up and you said, I was talking with a priest, you don't even necessarily have to say this priest's name, and I got some bad information from him, and I did some research and I found out that what he told me is wrong, and I'll just share that with you so that you're aware of it too. You could handle it like that, but I wouldn't rabble-rouse. I wouldn't try to build a movement of people against this priest. That would not be the right thing to do.
All right, cool, Patrick. Man, that's great information. I will follow up on that very
all right.
peacefully.
That's right. Peacefully, calmly, you know, the spirit of friendliness, irenicism. Irenicism, it's a great word. You don't hear it very often. And it means to have a kind of a tranquil, peaceful way of delivering information so that it's not pushy, it's not in your face, but it's still true. St. Paul said, speak the truth in love. I think that's a great way to go about it.
Okay. Thank you, Pat.
All right. Woo, woo!
That's right. Scott, Patrick, you're right.
I'm sensing a Back to the Future motif on the show today, and I like it.
Woo,
that's the
woo.
Power of love. What?
Woo, woo.
Yeah, I remember that. That's your new ringtone.
It sure is.
Oh, it's Patrick calling again. Hey, thank you, Matthew. Let's go to Conan now in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. Hello, Conan.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
My question is around the versions of the gospel. Mm-hmm. I watched a show the other day called Days of Noah that I believe was put on by Seventh Adventist. And the details that they had in Genesis about the flood, I couldn't find them in my, I think I'm using the New American Revision or Bible. And I was wondering, are there multiple Bibles for Catholics that would have more detail about Genesis, or are these stories are coming from Protestant Bibles that have details that don't exist in the Catholic Bible?
Well, Okay, it's not details per se. There will be a translation question. And without seeing that video myself and without knowing what their source Bible is, I don't know if they're seeking to, if they're purporting to be sharing things from the original Hebrew. But you have access to the original Hebrew. One place you can look at it is a website called blueletterbible.org, blueletterbible.org. So you can go to any passage in the Old or New Testament, and when you click on the tool section, it'll open up, what does the original language say? What is the original language for this passage? And then each word in that passage, in the Greek or in the Hebrew, you can click on the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance link, and it will open up where this word is found in Scripture, what are its possible meanings that it could be translated into English as. And sometimes there's even more commentary that can be very helpful. So number one, I would just ignore anything coming out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I say that with respect to the people who are involved. I'm sure they're very sincere. But it is a mishmash of errors and problems and has been ever since Ellen Gould White started this project in the 19th century. And it's also deeply, deeply anti-Catholic. That's a big part of their whole thing, is that Sabbath worship is the sign of being a true Christian. That's why they're Seventh-day Adventists, because they worship on the Sabbath, on the seventh day. And they argue that the Sunday worship is a sign or a mark of the Antichrist, a mark of the beast. And they're vociferous in their taking Scripture, especially when it comes to prophecy, and trying to turn it into an anti-Catholic screed. So I would strongly encourage you just to ignore all that stuff, because you're not going to get anything ultimately good and helpful, and you're going to get a lot of stuff mixed in that's really bad and harmful. They're not sound teachers. They're false teachers. And what they're teaching here and there may have some interesting truth to it, but overall, it's a recipe for big problems. So that'd be my first advice. Just ignore that stuff. Now, if you're looking for commentaries on whatever the passage is in the Old Testament, whatever it may be, you will find those galore. There are plenty of Catholic commentaries that will give you lots of deep insight into these. If you want to study the original language and see what are the actual words in the text there, blueletterbible.org is a free resource that you can make use of. So I would turn to teachers who are going to tell you the truth, not teachers who are going to teach falsely. Even though they're sincere, they're false teachers.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense. So from a Catholic perspective, there may be some translation differences in the Bible that are approved, but the stories will be the same.
Oh, certainly. So if we're talking about the canonical scriptures, the 73 books of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, if we're talking about those, yes, absolutely. And what's helpful is that the underlying source text in the Hebrew and in the Greek are readily available for inspection. Anybody can look at them. Anybody can see what the original languages are, and then you can draw your own comparisons. But you will find, this is inevitable when you translate from one language into another, there will be different ways that a translator might choose to translate a given word. And so that's why you'll see variations from maybe a Protestant Bible to a Catholic Bible. Sometimes they're tendentious because they don't want to translate a particular word a particular way. I'll give you a quick example. So the word ergon or ergoi in plural means works. And in a passage like Ephesians 2, verses 8 through 9, where it says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, this is a gift of God, this is not of works, lest anyone should boast." Or other passages where the idea of trying to earn your salvation by doing good works is condemned, and rightly so, the word will be translated into English as works. But if you look at another passage in some of these translations, such as in Romans chapter 2, and I would read the whole chapter, but in Romans chapter 2, St. Paul there is talking about the importance of works and how everyone will be rewarded for their works, either bad works or good works. But in some translation, the very same word in the Greek is translated elsewhere as works, but in this passage, for example, it's translated as well-doing. What do you mean well-doing? That's another way of saying works. So why did you translate it as works over here But here you translate it as well-doing when it's talking about the same thing. So that's what I mean by a tendentious translation. So you have to be careful. This is why commentaries are helpful. This is why reading a Bible that is approved by the Catholic Church is helpful, because then you'll know that some of these tendentious translations are not going to be present. Doesn't mean it's a perfect translation, but it's a more accurate and less tendentious translation. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's interesting and wonderful and commendable that you're interested in studying Scripture. But by all means, do not look to the false teachers. And there are plenty of them out there with slick videos and entertaining presentations. That's part of the problem. It's a lot of people, they get drawn in and they don't realize that more than half of what they're hearing is erroneous. Doesn't mean that it's erroneous, like they're saying that the Bible says something it really doesn't say, but the conclusions that they draw from what they're reading wind up being incorrect and can lead people astray.
Got it.
All right.
All right. Thanks, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Stay safe on those roads. Now, a man does have to know his limitations, and I know mine because I have Cyrus here to remind me every
Man's
single
got
time.
To know his limitations.
And I know what comes next.
Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent at
Wouldn't
this juncture.
Prudent. So I won't. But I am going to come back with hour two on the other side of this quick timeout. We'll get to that and some of your emails as well. I've got a stack of those as tall as Cyrus. And that's pretty tall. Have you ever seen Cyrus? He could be a basketball player. Maybe he was. All right. I'm coming right back. We'll go back to the future again right after this.